So my name is James Syro. Some of you have met me, some of you haven't yet. Basically, I just want to say that I'm happy to be here, and I've been here last year and looking forward to this conversation tremendously. Let me just begin by saying this, that I'm going to go in a bit of a different direction from the things you've heard, not you know, in a theological sense in any way, but in a sense of what I want to impress on people here and you know, those listening after the fact. And so that being said, I want to reassure everyone that I have a lot of respect for the work people do. And although I'm going to be doing some pushback on certain things, it doesn't come at the expense of the respect that I have for all the clergy and all the school administrators and all the work that people are doing. And it's interesting that at least in the room itself, there is nobody that is, you know, there's almost nobody that is over 30. Everyone that was fraught with danger, just my saying that.
No, it is a little bit skewed.
And that's interesting to me. That in itself is a symptom of what I'm going to talk about. But hopefully after the fact, people will be listening and not be so, I guess, disinterested in what I think is one of the most important things, not only in the church, in the school world today, in the classical cultural sense today. Anyone that wants to promote classical culture, like purely in its own sense, is also missing out if they're not engaging in what I'm going to talk about. So, thank you for those that are here. I think you made the best choice possible. Very, very quickly about me. So my background is in the marriage between liberal arts and technology. That's where I come from. In college, I had my degree in computer science and philosophy. And philosophy does not mean, in my case, you know, Heidegger and Kant and none of that nonsense, but like Aristotle and Plato. And then I did Latin and Greek as well for a couple of years. So I'm fully immersed in the classical, in the classical aspect of things, and that's important to me. But then I combine that with the tech part of life, because I think the two pieces are separated too much. And so once you bring them together, you're creating something that's even greater than some of its parts. So I have a digital agency and a ministry. God bless you. In Philadelphia, and we're basically employing Gen Z, you know, college students to just basically to build school and church websites and engage in social media and work on 21st century digital media engagement in a way that nobody else is right now. We've done a lot of really high-profile work already. Some of that you might have already heard about. The Anglicans for Life, the Prayer Book Society, we've rebuilt all their websites. Right now we're rebuilding the Reformed Episcopal Seminary website, which is going to be huge. And someone said they were founded in 1887, and their website looks like it was built in 1887. So, and I think that's true. I think that's very true. If you go, you can still catch it right now before we update it. You'll be impressed by how they've survived all this time without something better. But that experience, working with school administrators and clergy over the last couple of years, has really informed what I'm going to talk about. And that is basically this. A lot of people, in this case, a lot of your parents, a lot of your friends, a lot of your clergy, or in your case, a lot of, you know, even perhaps you yourselves, are wondering why your reach into the culture is very limited. What can you do to make more of an impact in the culture? And my thesis is that a lot of people here, and especially those in the broader world that we all live in, are no longer speaking to the world that exists anymore. I mean, I've had people tell me, who needs a website? Why not just do a bus ministry? You know, or a mailing, you know, ministry or like whatever. And people are wondering, how do I get more students into my school? Or how do I get more people to appreciate beauty? How do I get people into my pews, etc.? How do I get more fundraising? And they're using means of acquiring and achieving those ends that don't exist anymore. And they're aiming themselves at a target that's no longer even there anymore. So I want to talk about basically what all that is. I mean, think about the fact that even among the clergy and especially amongst the older clergy, there's this serious disrespect for technology in a way that we think it's optional. We think it's almost intrusive and it's almost beneath our dignity to get engaged with something that seems so ephemeral. And it is ephemeral. I mean, that's the fact of modern life, that it's ephemeral in large extent. And so we struggle with giving it a lot of respect that it deserves. And so what ends up happening is we don't even play in that world anymore. And what happens is we don't know how to play the game. And we play in the world of what we consider to be substantial and important things. You know, and theology is important. That's permanent forever. So we try to translate that into the media. So what does the media version of that mean? And people think, well, that must be physical, tangible things that are permanent, like a physical book, or like even like, you know, a building. I mean, a building is important, of course. You know, it's never been more important. But it's not the only thing that's important. I'll put it this way. I want to argue there's now a second building you want to be building, which is in the world of the web. And a lot of the biggest companies in the secular world, the biggest companies in the world, don't even have buildings. So Amazon, what's Amazon's post, like, you know, mailing address? You know, or like Apple must have a headquarters, right, in Cupertino. But like, where do you write the letter? Or where do you go? There is no like one place, right? Or Google, like you can Google everything except Google's own address, right? And so they got something we've missed, which is that with the new way of how things are, the web is more, in some ways, more permanent than what we've been used to for the past 50, 100, 500 plus years. And so, because it's not given the respect that I think it deserves, we are not playing by the rules of the modern world. And so we're no longer speaking to where the people are. Think about if you wanted to, like, think about how the world has changed just in the last 10 years. How many, like, let's say, I'll ask the young guys, how many of, like, your parents said, you're never going to have a cell phone until you're like, you know, 35 or whatever, you know, right? Or like, how about this? Like, did they ever say to you, Facebook is for kids? I'm a rector. I'm never going to be on Facebook, right? And then they're now on Facebook, right? What about 10 years ago? If someone said to you, the best way for a young teenage girl to travel home from a party or whatever would be to get into a stranger's car, call someone on the phone, get into a random car that pulls up, that'll be the safest and the best way to get home. Right? And now that's like people actually buy Uber, you know, like accounts for their daughters just to be extra safe. Right? And so just think of 2005, 2006, and think of how much has changed in just the last 10, 11 years. And then think of 1995 to 2006 and how much has changed in that stretch of time. So we're living in a very interesting time, but nobody seems to be knowing it or acknowledging it. People are like, oh, we can still do bus ministry, we can still act like it's the 1928, you know, Jubilee or whatever, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable to what extent we're willing to ignore facts and evidence to fit presuppositions and preconceived beliefs about how things should be and not how they actually are, okay? So to push. And by the way, I'll have room for questions, you know, at the end of this. So there's going to be time if you want to ask or whatever. But just to push my point a little further, I want to go way back, and I want to look at someone that's really interesting and important in this year 2017. That would be Martin Luther, right? Why is he interesting and important for this conversation? Isn't he like ancient by every measure of the word ancient? He is, right? But, yeah.
Well, he harnessed that day's modern press.
Well, right. You mentioned the modern press, and he's kind of like in the bucket of the modern press or the printing press or whatever. But what does that mean? Like, how do you leverage that little fact of knowledge into something you can do differently today? It's hard to convert that into specific actionable knowledge. So what I want to talk about is not just the printing press as a broad brush of like that everyone would know about, but something interesting, which is I want to recommend to all of you this book called Brand Luther. We had him interviewed on our podcast, me and Father Bart and Father Brian Oldfield. We had him. We have a podcast, so we brought the author, Dr. Andrew Pettigrew, on the podcast off this book. And in this book, he makes a thesis that the way Luther made his mark was not just through the printing press, because the printing press existed since 1454 or whatever. That's like 60 years, you know, from like, you know, like for us today, that would be like something invented in the 50s that suddenly makes sense only now. That doesn't. So it existed already. That's not the issue. The issue is not the printing press per se. It's the fact. Well, I'll put it to you this way. Why didn't you know, like someone like John Huss, who was very similar to Luther, why didn't he succeed? Or why didn't John Wycliffe succeed in the same space, in the same, you know, sort of mold of doing things? And the reason is because you had to simply, I mean, the printing press was an important piece of that. You had to write everything they said down by hand and then had somebody else copy it by hand, which is impossibly inefficient for what they were trying to do. It was easy to suppress it. But even after the printing press was invented, nobody did what Luther did, which is this, okay? It's not that he published a book, a 500-page tome, that he sent out and suddenly like, oh my God, like everything is different. What really happened with the strategy he pursued was 3-4 page pamphlets, the ephemera as they're called, very few of which actually survive today. Only one or two examples of one of these might exist today. And he printed them by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. And they actually, it's like, I think of that as tweets of today. Things that were dismissed by his opponents as inefficient and irrelevant and not theologically substantial, not engaging with the issues on a deep, deep, deep level like they were willing to engage. These were ephemeral again. And yet what he understood is that we're now living, this is not 1517, but he understood it back then, we're living in the age of consumption. We're living in the age of things that are made cheaply and can be thrown away and be made cheaply again. Whereas up until that point, it was a world of scarcity, where things were rare and expensive and hard to get. And so it's kind of like in this DNA that we've inherited of having that way of thinking about the media. But almost nobody sees that part of Luther's legacy. And, you know, the only way Roman Catholics could challenge him was by starting to produce their own pamphlets and their own like broadsheets of like a page or two. But not only that, also his pamphlets were very, very, very beautiful, like physically, classically printed. So he basically recruited the best artist of the time, Lucas Cranach in Germany. And he made Lucas Cranach move to Wittenberg and basically help be the arts genius behind his printing. And Luther would be down in the printing shop every single morning checking the proofs and making sure and correcting things. So he was personally involved in the printing itself. And if you ever go down the rabbit hole of the history of just the trivia of that time, and if you get this book and you can see it in the book, the Lutheran pamphlets were gorgeous, beautiful. And the Roman Catholic pamphlets were ugly. They just were ugly. Not unlike the church websites of today. That's just the reality. You know, if you were to rank all the websites you've ever seen in your life, from the best to the worst, which category would be at the bottom?
I don't know what it is.
You know, it would be schools, right?
Governments.
Governments. Churches.
I'm sorry.
And nonprofits. Right? It's not like it's a church problem. It's an institutional problem. Because in the world where you don't have the profit motive, you have this delusion that you can avoid the changes that are happening. Because the changes will happen, they may not sweep over you and make you go bankrupt. So you don't have to worry about it in the immediate sense, and you have this illusion that you don't have to worry about it at all. And then suddenly you wake up in 2017 and, you know, your sons are on Snapchat, your daughters are on Instagram, having 3 hours to do a selfie, you know, literally. You know, and you're like, what's happened to the world? And the answer is you've missed the boat. And so the key that I want to underscore right now is this whole point with Luther, is that Luther was not a man who would ignore his daughter being on Snapchat as a player and a factor of what the world is all about today and what he should be doing with his life and how he should be speaking into the world and engaging with the world. Luther would not be interested in writing manuscripts. You know? He just wouldn't be. Because he understood it, but his opponents thought that's beneath them. And so that's kind of where we are right now. I want to really, really zoom in on that point. We're really in exactly the same place of 1517, which is really interesting from the media perspective. So with all the bad news, there's actually good news. The good news is that most of the secular world is missing the boat too. Except for people that are sort of growing up in that stuff. If you're like under 20, you couldn't help but getting into that stuff. I'm 35. I just missed it. I just missed it. So it was never natural to me. And I actually got really, really heavily into it like a year ago. But up until about a year ago, I didn't want to do social media because that wasn't part of how I grew up myself. And so I can really resonate with a lot of people that feel like they don't get it instinctually. It's not something that's obvious to a 67-year-old in a way that it would be to a 17-year-old. So I can resonate, huh? What's interesting about what you said is actually Gen Z, Generation Z, which is anyone from like 22 down to 12. It's the post-millennial, you know, generation, the next one coming up. They're considered to be the most conservative since World War II. Millennials are very dissolute for some reason, for a lot of different reasons, and they're very, very flamboyant on social media. A lot of people that are under 20 are very conservative on social media. So they're kind of reacting against a lot of the excesses that people my age have been doing, right? Like lots of selfies and all that stuff. But it's not that someone that's young isn't interested and doesn't understand it. It's more like they're careful with it, and they want to be careful. Their reputation is protected, and they don't waste time on it when they should be doing something more profound. And that's what the Gen Z conservativism is all about. But imagine being someone that has never not seen the internet. Like, the few of us here that actually know what that's like to be in a world with no internet. Try to imagine always having had internet and never having had it. And then it's like cats are colorblind, or dogs are colorblind. And imagine trying to explain color to a cat or a dog. So we're basically colorblind cats trying to adjust to a colorful world. And so I made the plunge. I made the plunge in a big, big way. And we can talk about all the challenges that go along with that as well. But So that's basically the whole sort of dynamic. Everyone that's like older than 35 is not even interested, doesn't even understand it. People that are sort of 35 to like 25 are kind of like engaging in it fully, except for people like me, but now I'm as well. And then everyone super, super young are getting cagey about it again. But it's a fact of life. Web stuff is now more permanent to a young person, even to like a middle-aged person, than a lot of books, a lot of things that we used to think were the things that mattered. But like I said, it's not only us that are suffering from this. The good news is that a lot of progressives, like atheist progressives, are not getting the stuff either. So it's not a matter of where you come from. It's a matter of how old you are. It's like almost a banal, very, very basic, very raw reasoning for why people are comfortable or not comfortable. It's just when you were born. And so a lot of the old school progressives are struggling with grasping social media. And for example, like how did Trump win? Trump won not by being Donald Trump. He won by a lot of young people going to battle for him on the web. There's a lot more young people like on fire for Trump than there were on fire for Hillary. I mean, that's an understatement, right? But even with Bernie, he only had a few people like super fired up, but Trump has millions of young people.
Why? Are they stupid?
No, it's not. It's not. There's a lot of reasons, and I wish this were a political session. And I could talk to you about that off, you know, afterwards. But to me, without it being a matter of what I think about it, to me it makes perfect sense. And I think the future is going to be a lot more like him than like Hillary.
Aren't the young people, almost regardless of ideology, they're kind of fed up with the institution? He's an outsider. There's a sense in which, regardless of what you think about him as a person, he's just—it's not quite the same.
I mean, yeah, we could talk about the politics of it.
Same.
We could talk about it, but the key that I want to underscore is his victory had to do with young people. That's what I want to talk about.
Obama didn't he win partially too? I heard because he used social media much more effectively.
Right.
For him, ideology aside, he's just more effective than media.
I think what you said is the most important thing. Ideology aside,
right? It's the
you have to really zero in on that key point. Ideology doesn't carry the day for anyone on its own. Apart from Providence, which is always going to win out no matter what, within things that are seemingly up to us, ideology isn't what carries the day. I like this proverb: war is not about who's right, war is about who's left. You know what I mean? So it's almost indifferent to what the ideology is, whoever can seize the higher ground first. And right now, it's young people that aren't happy with the sort of the PC, the chill out and stop being so like so extreme culture that the baby boomers have created and imposed upon the country. And so their grandchildren are saying, we want to be out there and outspoken. And so in our culture, that means being very old-fashioned. In the 60s, that meant being very radically modern. So it's the same mindset, but what you're reacting against is the opposite of the 60s. It's like the anti-60s moment right now, which is a whole different other political thing to say. But so anyway, so the key that I want to say is that older people as a group don't understand. And why that's important is that people in our circles are struggling to grasp, this is what I began with, how do I make a change and make an impact? How do I break out? How do I get people to listen to me? How do I get more people in my schools, in my pews? How do I get more people to like classical stuff on Instagram or whatever, how do you get classical culture to advance forward? If you're concerned about Trump and you're concerned about the aspects of him that are not interested in the traditional and sort of the permanent and important aspects that he maybe is a little bit too cavalier with, and you're trying to push something of your own into the culture that's going to help balance sort of where the country is going, how do you do that? And people that are older don't know. And it's just a matter of, if it doesn't matter what your age is, how old you are, it doesn't matter. It's if you're willing to learn the way the world is today. And if you are, you suddenly have an advantage that is immeasurable. The only people that have an advantage like yours, if you suddenly sort of see the light, are other people that have seen the light. And right now it's usually young people, and they don't have any leverage in the culture right now. So if you're someone in your middle years or in your elder years, but you've seized the media of 2017 in an 18-year-old way, like a certain country president has, suddenly you just dominate. You just dominate. And ideology doesn't matter. It's how you work with the media. In 1517, you could be a monk that suddenly wants to do something no one else has ever done before or since, and you can't. In 2017, you could be a reality TV star, and suddenly you're the president of the United States. It's all about understanding the way the world works today and not the way you wish it were, or the way you'd like it to be, the way you're afraid it might be. It's just a fact. And we have to be people that deal with facts and reality above all else. And so that's what I want to implore you, as the basic groundwork, okay? Let's see. The last thing I'll say is this. People that are looking for leverage, people that are looking to make a difference in the world, usually don't. For the reason that there's usually institutions in place to not suppress by sort of a conspiracy, but almost by default, suppress anyone that's not in the institution. And the only time that you can break out as an individual and build your own new institutions is when the old ones break or are being broken. And so if you're looking for making an impact, your hope as a person is to be born into a time when there's a revolution of some sort happening. I mean, unless, you know, but even in like the 50s, when people thought things were amazing and that's how things should be forever, there was a revolution happening. And nobody from the right people was in it and on it, on that horse. And so he just went off galloping on its own, and now we see 60 years later what that brought us to. But if we were just engaged in that world, if our young people were in that world in the 60s, but then harnessing it for the right purposes, I think it would have led to a very different result. And so today, no one is... I think in the school world, in the church world, and even in the classical world, no one is really playing in the game of you know, I'll just list them off to you. Instagram, Snapchat, Musical.ly. We can talk a little bit about Twitter. Twitter is kind of on its way out. Facebook is for old people, right? It just is. It just is. If you're trying to reach anyone that's under 25, they're not going to be on Facebook. And 10 years ago, we thought Facebook was only for teenagers. So it's a very rapidly moving time. But what does that tell me? What that tells me is that we're living through an industrial revolution right now as we speak. This is the best time to be born and to be alive and to be building dreams and building plans that are larger than life. Because this is the time when the old bulwarks are breaking down. The old controls, the old gatekeepers are no longer gatekeepers, as we've seen with the media and all that. So any one of you that is interested in making a huge, huge impact, step number one is we have to stop being romantic about how the world used to be and what we wish the world was. And number two, we embrace the world as it is, and we ask the question, where is people's attention at? Where what are they looking at every single day? Everyone here knows of teenage girls that spend 3 hours on Snapchat every day. Okay? And we think that's like a stupid thing, but what if we were on Snapchat? I mean, for real. And people are afraid of Instagram, and Instagram has a lot of like smutty things on it, a lot of things that repel like a good, decent person, and it should. But that's because there's none of the good stuff being pushed on Instagram. people have no choice, and they just end up being sort of inundated into this sort of modern pagan world of, you know, whatever. That's not the best out of what people can do with themselves, and we leave that world to do its own thing, and we don't even play by those rules anymore. But everyone else that's growing up is living only in that world. And so I want to ask us to reorient ourselves and reorient our priorities. This is not the 1950s, this is not even the 1990s anymore. This is 2018, this is 2024. This is Pokemon Go, augmented reality, not the game. Not the game, the technology that lets you impose your looking at the world through the phone, and it imposes objects in your phone that aren't in the real world. Kind of like the step before VR, basically. And VR is coming as well. It's coming. Right, and so if we don't get on the treadmill now, and if we don't play the game and learn the rules and master the rules with the best of them, we're gonna miss, and we're missing already, which is a kind of a defensive thing to say. But if I want to be offensive and I want to be proactive about what I recommend, I wouldn't say just don't forget to get on this before it leaves you. I would say get on this because you can have an advantage that people you're competing against don't. Because they wouldn't get on it. You're getting on this horse, you're getting on this train, and you're going to catch the culture, and you're going to catch the people that you're trying to catch, and you're going to reach the world that you're trying to reach. And there's no other way. I believe there's no way to get ahead in the world of 2018 anymore, 2019, without putting aside the things of the past, the media of the past. So a lot of times people, I'll mention, this is an important aside. A lot of the reasons why people are afraid to engage with the new, because a lot of times newness involves, you know, bad ideas that come along with it, theologically, etc., etc. So people are just afraid of even playing in that world, because once you start to think of new, and you're hungering for new things all the time, then you might start thinking of new things in things you shouldn't be thinking about. And that's a valid point. So a lot of like evangelical, non-denominational churches, you know, they're big on like Snapchat, but they're also big on other bad ideas. And so we see that example and we say, oh, well, let's not follow them. I want to suggest to all of you here that we should make a distinction between the media and the content. The content must stay the same for all time, unquestionably. But the media is going to have to change. And if we change with the world in the media, we can push the unchanging content very rapidly and very effectively. Whereas if we hold our old-fashioned content and our old-fashioned media together in a little package, then no one's going to know about the content. They're not even going to learn about it. They're not even going to be exposed to it to even say yes or no to it. And so that's the thing I want to leave you all with. If you want to ask any questions, I'll be happy to entertain them. But basically, there's no third option. We either engage with the world or we get left behind. Thank you.
Called Brand Cruiser?
Right, so the book I mentioned in the beginning was Brand Luther.
Brand what?
Luther. So, Luther? Yes.
Yeah.
So
he has his own brand.
Yeah.
Brand marketing itself. Who wrote that?
Dr. Andrew Pettigrew of the University of Edinburgh.
Pettigrew.
And yeah, if you know like Luther trivia, you'd know that in like 1518, you would be like a respectable parent, a burgher in a German town. You'd walk into your daughter's bedroom and she'd have a portrait of Luther on her wall. You know, that was a thing. That was a reality. So Brand Luther, yes.
Okay, you use Luther as an example, but before Luther got into this technology, he had a lot of substance. And he didn't get that from theology. He got that from classical education. Okay, so you have young people under 20 who have their nose in their computer or their iPod or something. Where do they get the classical culture? The sources of beauty, truth, and goodness. It doesn't happen. It doesn't. You don't get it in the air. You don't get it by looking at your iPhones. So how do you get it? That's the question. I've got great grandkids now. And they're looking at this all the time. And they're communicating. And I see what they communicate. It's all rubbish. It's nonsense. It's ephemeral. It's empty. So unless somehow they get a connection to classical culture, you were talking about your philosophy major, they're not going to read Plato and Aristotle. They don't give a crap about Plato and Aristotle. They don't even know how to spell their name. So how are you going to get that? I mean, how can you bring the ancient world, the classical world, which knows something about truth, beauty, and goodness, how do you bring that world into connection with the world you're talking about, the modern world of technology? I mean, I think that's, for me, that's the question.
Yeah, that is the question. I mean, just to repeat for the mic, the question is how do you get people to learn content that's important in the classical, value worldview? And my answer to that is simply using the means of the media today. So in other words, how did you learn classical, values and all that? You read books, right? That was the media that was given to you in the 1950s and the 60s and the 70s and 80s and 90s. So what if we, spoon-fed, classical values through Snapchat? That's the key point. The medium has no values in it. The medium has no content in it. And what you're saying is, my grandchildren are consuming media with no content. That's true. But you can have books with no content. The medium is agnostic to what it does. It's just carrying stuff.
So it doesn't have any truthful and beautiful content. It gets rubbish for content. There's
right.
no content.
Right. So you right. So my point is, you can generate classical content in the new media in just the same way.
Somebody's got to be able to have to know what that is.
Of course. So somebody had to learn how to print books.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. 2,000 years ago, people were reading on scrolls or chiseling in stone tablets. And then someone had to learn how to make a book. Oh my God, how do you do that? You have to cut down wood and create paper. That's too expensive. No, let's go back to just a scroll. Mm-hmm. Right? And now...
You can't learn Plato without reading Plato.
Of course not. Of course not. But how did you get interested in reading Plato? It's somebody told...
Somebody else who read Plato.
But they told you. They told you. Sure. So now, what if I were to interest your grandkids to read Plato, either in a book or in a Kindle or whatever, using Snapchat?
That's in another culture.
No. What
years ago, who cares about that?
What I want to challenge you is on that, and I do that respectfully. It's not that they disrespect how old it is. Because once it gets to be older than 20 years, it doesn't matter if it's 200 or 2,000 years old, right? I mean, if they're 14 years old, they don't know what 20 years old means. So ancient is a very stretchable term. The only question is how can you use the media of today to transfer that content? Are you skilled enough and talented, not you personally, but are we skilled and talented enough to pump through, not Plato as a book, through something that's bite-sized? That's not the point. The point is, you use the bite-sized methods to get someone hooked on pursuing something on their own. Because someone hooked you on Plato, using a bite-sized comment, a recommendation, a brief 2-second description, a wink and a nudge, and then that got you interested to then pursue it further. So where your grandkids are, no one's winking and nudging at them that Plato's cool. Plato's lit, Plato's lit. That should be on a t-shirt. And like you make a t-shirt that says Plato's lit, you do a Snapchat with it. And then they're like, who's Plato? Let me look it up. That's my point. The point is, the media doesn't have any content in it. And we just need to use the content that exists. Not because, hey, it's a good idea. The point is, we can't not use it. If we don't use it, we become like the scroll writers. and the stone tablet to, like, you know, inscribers. So that's where we are today. And I think anyone that's gonna
okay, let's say we've got to use it. There's no alternative. We've got to use it. Now, how do you use it? I mean, who's got the smarts to be able to use it constructively, efficiently, so that the true content, so good content comes through? I mean, who are these people who can do that? You?
I'd like to try.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, may your tribe increase.
That's what I'm here for. So the question was for the mic, who's going to be doing all this hard work? And it is hard work, because you were born into a culture that had handwritten books, and now everyone's like printing, and you don't know how to print yourself. And the challenge is to learn this new skill. And it is a skill. It's challenging. I'm not saying it's super obvious. Just because I say it's important and in fact necessary doesn't mean that I say it's trivial or obvious or easy. It's like every other skill. Driving was hard when you had to learn it, but you learned it. So you could learn it, and suddenly if you learn it, you spend 6 months, a year to learn this stuff in secret, like on your own, a project of your own, just to master Snapchat. A year from now, 2018 comes around, suddenly you're communicating with grandkids on their own terms. Suddenly you're no longer unreachable. So, yeah.
Oh, no question.
A couple of questions. How does a church, I'm talking now as a church rather than individual Christians, how does the church make use of this technology? What are some practical ways we can begin using it?
So the question... the question was how does the church execute on these sorts of themes and topics that I mentioned? The website is absolutely prerequisite. It's now so basic that it's almost something you don't even recommend. Because if you don't have a website, you don't exist. That's just a fact of life. Not even to 20-year-olds, but to like 40-year-olds. That's the basic. But once you have a really great website that is going to be not just some, like a placeholder or a band-aid, but let me just look at the time here.
We gotta go.
I'm sorry.
No worries.
Enjoy.
We'll be done in a few minutes. So, but then you have to really learn at least three things. You have to learn Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. So, for example, on Instagram, you could literally find the top Instagrammers in your zip code. And you can either have them as influencers, have them that they just happen to be running into your church, and they took a selfie with your church, you know, facade behind them, and suddenly, like, everyone following them is like, what is this place? Why are they going there? Let me check it out. So influencers on Instagram is one. Snapchat also has a local sort of geographical feature to it called geo-filters. You can do a Snapchat story, a video story, and then you can cycle through and you can create a geo-filter just for your church that only people in that zip code would see. Even if they weren't in the church, they would just be walking around on the street doing a Snapchat story, whatever. And then they cycle through filters and they see your church's filter right there on their Snap. And that's very cheap. It's very cheap to get those, and they can reach thousands of people for like a couple of dollars.
Okay, a couple of follow up questions. I'm very motivated to do these kinds of things. Aside from just figuring it out for myself, is there any place that can kickstart me?
Yes.
Get me up to speed faster?
Yes. There's someone I follow personally, and I don't recommend many people. I'll get you in a second. I'll just tell you this. Gary Vaynerchuk. I'll give you his name. I'll spell his name afterwards. V-A-Y-N-E-R-C-H-U-K. He's the only one. There's nobody else that I would recommend to you. Don't follow Kim Kardashian or... you know, Kylie Jenner, like, they are executing without teaching people how to execute, but he's going to teach you how to execute.
Okay.
We've got a couple of questions. Ideas, not solving people. So, like the older gentleman was asking me about the means and stuff. So the people, the new generation you were talking about, they're going to have learned Plato and Aristotle not from Snapchat or Instagram, but from their classical schools or from just any school that they learned from. So would you suggest that, I mean, there's a lot of guys my age here, we're the new generation you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
We've learned our Plato, or we will have learned our Plato and Aristotle from the school. Are you suggesting that? So your idea is that we should get integrated with those, with the technologies, so that we can start, say, Plato book.
So
on the graphic page for Anglicans, or like a Snapchat news thing.
Yeah.
It's St. Stephen's feast day. And people will be like, oh yeah.
Absolutely. So think of these media as not as a book that you can stuff a book length of content into. No one's going to read a million Instagram quotes. that's not going to happen. And I'm following like all the big influencers of that world as well, and they're kind of crushing it with like thousands of likes and all. So that world is taken over, I think, already. But you can still play in that game. What I would say is think of these media as hooks that reel people in, and you could be the champion. Not that you would recite Plato altogether from scratch, from beginning to end, but you would be a champion of classical wisdom, or you could be the Instagram Platonist, like the most lit quotes from Plato, with like 5,000 likes every single day, or if you don't think Plato could make it, maybe try Plato and blah, or maybe like, how do you make Plato cool? Maybe like you have to create great photos and like you can find the ways. You can find the ways. So the goal is, but also I would say don't fit reality to your want. I would say fit the want to reality. In other words, you have to know there's a need, and I believe there's a strong need for classical stuff. But you have to, whatever you do and go all in on, you don't want to just do it for the social good or like because it's the right thing to do, but do it because you know it's going to work. In other words, a lot of people are just doing things just because they really mean well, and then they end up spending a lot of years just speaking into silence. You want to go to a place where people will hear you automatically from some other reason, and then you just say your truth to that audience. Does that make sense? So I would suggest the easy way instead of the hard way, which is shouting into the ocean.
But if you talk to the other people who are already open-minded to that, how would you reach out to the people who aren't open-minded to that? Wouldn't you just be bouncing ideas off the people who are already having one?
You just want to fish. So the question is, how do you... You just want to fish people out that already agree with you. It's kind of like the underbelly of how things work nowadays. It's all about echo chambers. You can grow the echo chamber beyond what it is, but you have to begin with people that already agree with you across the whole country.
Most people aren't like, you also don't know what they're looking for. But most people, I mean, beauty and truth and goodness, those sorts of things, even with the files to people who look at them and they're closed off to it, but really, they're probably rebelling against something. And so we can reach out to them, I think.
I would say
that they're hungry for,
right.
And so without being preachy, we can't even ask questions.
Right.
The doubters and the rebels are going to resonate with some of those questions, are you tired of the incident? Are you tired of this? And then offering something better.
Yeah, but also I would want to say, just this is the last point, right? We have to go. I would say instead of thinking of people maybe possibly interested, let's force them, persuade them. There's so many people in the world that you can find your exact copies, carbon copies, in South Carolina, in Seattle.
But who we're trying to reach, carbon copies?
You need a base. It's all about strategy. So the question is, how do you, if we're not becoming tactical, you want to become someone that thousands of people listen to, and then you can then say the things that matter. So you find people that agree with you. You build an echo chamber of classical school students that don't have an Instagram account they can follow. Now you're that account. And suddenly all the bad pictures are pushed out a little bit by your quote from Plato every single day. So that's at least one benefit, no matter what else you can say. You're pushing out the bad content by imposing your content into their stream. And once you build the audience, then you can push the boundaries and push it out, expand to people that haven't heard of it yet. But you need to have a castle, a fortress from which you can salvo out. You don't want to just be a lone ranger. So anyway, that's my thesis. Thank you for listening.